coming up. I'm answering your mailbag questions about Summer League and the NBA offseason. That's all coming up right now. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. We get a mailbag edition of the episode today talking about NBA Summer League, some lingering questions about the offseason. Let's get into it with a question from Mr. Downtown. What is the ceiling for Braden Burries? Bucks took Burries with the 10th pick in the draft, and he's been one of the big standouts. He looks absolutely unbelievable. In four games, he has 79 total points, shooting 41% from three. He has 13 assists to only one turnover, seven steals, three blocks. And I think with Burries, this is the opposite of how things were for him as a freshman at Arizona. Entering his freshman year, he really struggled to start the year at Zona. He looked kind of like Busty in a way, and he was awesome to finish the year. Now he's carrying it over into Summer League, looking like an even more developed overall version of himself, getting into the mid-range, getting to the cup with drives to the basket, with cuts to the basket, finishing with both the left and the right hand. From three-point range, the shot, I think it was the first shot he had against the Suns. This nasty sidestep three-pointer going to his left. He looks like a three-level scorer doing literally everything out there for the Bucks. As the 10th pick, you could argue he's been the best guard in Summer League. And I think for Milwaukee, obviously, it's the post-Giannis era. You're hoping that you have something to latch on to. Nate Amen's been okay as the 13th pick. As expected, he'll be up and down. But Braden Burries, man, as a big, strong guard, he looks like the real deal. And this is why I reported at the time of the NBA draft combine that he was into the conversation to go fifth to the Clippers. So in an alternate universe, he's the fifth pick in the draft, and the Clippers might be looking like geniuses for taking him ahead of where people projected him to go, which was in that 10 range where Milwaukee ended up getting him. So look, I think Braden Burries, in terms of your question, Mr. Downtown, his ceiling, we know his floor. We know it's high-level role player with all the things he does as a high IQ guy who can cut and screen and defend and crash the boards. He does all the dirty work, and we've seen that in this summer league. But we're seeing the ceiling could be a lot higher than people anticipated with the development of his jumper off the dribble. And that could mean he could end up someday perhaps the best or second best guard in this year's draft class, which is saying a lot, especially considering our next question here from Jimmy Pants. Where in the top five does Malik Thomas go in our NBA redraft? Well, Malik Thomas obviously falls to the second round to the Cleveland Cavaliers after being expected to go, you know, in the 20 to 25 range this year. And he's there on night two. Malik Thomas goes to Cleveland. Well, so far he has games with 35 points, 30 points, and 20 points for Cleveland. And he looks like a complete overall scorer getting to the basket. He had this beautiful wrong foot lefty layup finish. And I know everybody's like looking at the highlights of the three-point shooting, the mid-range pull-ups, the fadeaways. I mean, he looks spectacular from the perimeter. But that finish is going to stick in my mind with the left-footed finish he had around the basket, because he has this creativity to his game. He's not the quickest. He's not the most bursty. He's not the most explosive. But he has such a high-level feel for the game. And one of the things that really intrigued me about Thomas at Arkansas was last year, without Acuff on the floor. So, well, let's backtrack. With Acuff on the floor, Thomas averaged 19.2 points per 40 minutes. That was on 55% true shooting. Without Acuff out there on the floor, he averaged 26.5 points per 40 minutes on 60% true shooting. A lot of the times when a really good player is on the floor without their star, Acuff was for Arkansas, their numbers fall off. Their volume might go up, but their efficiency might fall off. In the case of Thomas, both his volume scoring and his true shooting, his efficiency skyrocketed up. And we saw him have a heavier on-ball role with 30 points against Missouri in a big game that Acuff missed. And then against Ole Miss in the tournament, he had 29 points with five assists. And that pushed Arkansas to the championship in the conference tournament. And so, look, he showed what he can do in limited opportunities without Acuff at Arkansas. And so far with Cleveland, he looks like the absolute steal of the second round. And I wouldn't be totally surprised if this is something that is the real deal with him. Obviously, he's not going to average 30 as a rookie in the NBA, but this is a very talented scorer, and he would definitely go in the first round without a doubt if we redrafted today, it's not premature to say that. And once Summer League officially wraps up, I'm going to do a full first round, way too early redraft for a nice little summer project for us to discuss. Because look, by that point, I hope LeBron James signs. We'll talk about LeBron and Jalen Duren and some lingering free agent stuff later in the conversation. But let's continue with the Summer League questions. This one is from Trey. Trey said, other than the top four picks, which rookie has impressed you the most in Summer League so far? Let's also remove Malik Thomas and Braden Burries from this conversation, because I think with those two, they would be the answers. It would be Malik Thomas or Braden Burries aside from the top four guys. I'm going to go with another guard, though. LeBaron Filon. I had him ranked different places throughout the pre-draft process. He's 176 pounds. I was a little worried about his weight, but from conversations I had in recent weeks leading up to the draft, I felt a bit better about how teams were feeling about his ability to add weight, get stronger over time. And then he still falls to the 20s to the Philadelphia 76ers anyway. So it didn't really matter. But I did end up having him ranked in the late lottery anyway. And I think with Filon, the thing that's just been so impressive is just the ability to get where he wants on the floor against some really good defensive players. I know it's just summer league, but we've seen him get into the mid-range. We've seen him get to the paint. His three-point shot has translated so far in summer league. And for Philadelphia, they don't necessarily need another guard. I didn't love the fit on draft night. I think I gave this like a B grade, because value-wise, awesome. You get a lottery quality player in the 20s. But they already have Maxey there. They already have Edgecombe. They just traded for Jaylen Brown. They have a lot of guards in that roster. But hey, with Filon, even though he's small, the way in which he gets to any spot on the floor is the most valuable skill in the NBA. And for Philadelphia to get this guy in the 20s adds another very important ball handler to their rotation. And it wouldn't surprise me too much if we see him playing off the bench as a rookie. And I think, hey, you know, Daryl Morey got fired. But when they made that Jared McCain trade, I ripped them as much as anybody for that decision. The way it was spun by Philadelphia was they got four picks for Jared McCain. Well, the first return for that pick, for that trade, is LeBaron Filon, and he's been one of the Summer League standouts. Next question here from Inside the Arc. When it's all said and done, who from the 2026 NBA draft class are we all going to look back and say, how'd we miss that? I think the answer to this one is Sergio Delarue at the 25th pick. He went to the Dallas Mavericks. Big guard falling into the 20s, not a college basketball player, not getting all the eyeballs on him that players often do playing in college, and he falls to the 20s. But Sergio Delarue, at his size, at 6'6", over 200 pounds with a 6'9 wingspan, his ability to get where he wants on the floor and to make high-level field plays. He had 16 points and 12 assists in his most recent Summer League game against the Grizzlies, and just whipping the ball all around the floor. And I think with Delarue, this is a guy I really liked. I had him ranked 20th on my board. So I know a lot of people had him, you know, in the similar range. Some had him in the 30s. But with Delarue, I think that the feel for the game is just so high-level. And I know Mavericks fans as well see him taking some of these kind of like methodical sidestep pull-up three-pointers where it's like, that looks a little bit familiar. That looks a little bit like Luka. And I'm not saying he's ever going to be Luka. That would be an outrageous comparison to make. But I do think with Delarue that without a doubt, as the 25th pick in the draft, that was too low. And for him to fall to Dallas, that team now has Cooper Flagg, Moritz Johnson, Sergio Delarue. Even their Russian rookie in the second round looks okay as well. Like this team could be really good really soon. And I think for Dallas, there's some Mavericks fans who are like, man, Braden Burries looks so good with Milwaukee. Maybe we should have taken him with the 9th pick instead of Moritz Johnson. But the fact you got Delarue with the 25th pick, you're not getting a Moritz Johnson type of player at 25. Moritz Johnson was only there at 9. And so I think for Dallas, they nailed it. They made the right decisions and they played this perfectly, including the trade up to get Delarue on draft night. Next question from Bank. Which rookie do you think will make the biggest impact? So I'm reading this question as biggest impact on winning, because like biggest impact is just choosing the rookie of the year. I mean, or like the number one pick. I'm taking this as biggest impact on winning. And so Yaxel Lendenborg from Golden State would be one of the answers to this one. The feel for the game he has, the summer league, the playmaking, the bounce passes, passing open his teammates. He looks absolutely sensational for the Warriors. I think he's getting anywhere he wants on the floor as well. He looks very comfortable from three-point range. That was a question for him, extending to the three-point line, and he's doing it very, very comfortably. For Golden State, I said this on my pod over the weekend, and it was not some hot take, not some overreaction. Yaxel Lendenborg makes Jimmy Butler more expendable. And that's because of the things that Butler brings to the floor. Butler is an all-around guy who can post up a little bit. He can drive to the basket. He can run a pick and roll. He can screen. He can cut. He can do all those things as a connective piece. Isn't that exactly what Yaxel Lendenborg looks like for Golden State? I know it's just summer league, but he's a 24-year-old rookie. He's coming in older. He's a grizzled veteran, essentially, from the college level. And if they have an opportunity to go get LeBron James, if it means trading Butler and future picks for Anthony Davis, you go and do that. In part because you have Yaxel Lendenborg, you can feel confident in what he can bring you as a rookie. So I think biggest impact, that specifically, that's one of them. And the other one would be Cameron Boozer, who I do think is the right choice right now for Rookie of the Year. But I think with Boozer, even putting the Rookie of the Year stuff aside, in Memphis, as long as Zach Edey is healthy, this Grizzlies team is going to exceed expectations. I don't know what their over-under is. I haven't seen it listed on any sports book yet, but the Memphis Grizzlies with Edey and Boozer and Cedric Coward and Ty Jerome and Jalen Wells and G.G. Jackson, it's a long list of really, really talented players within that organization. As long as Edey's healthy, they're going to have their stud big. They're a plus 17 net last year with Edey on the floor. And Boozer, this summer league, he just looks like a veteran, averaging about 20 points per game on high efficiency, not even shooting the three very well, but getting to the mid-range, getting the basket, the playmaking, the decision-making. Dude, Boozer looks amazing, and as does all of those top four guys in their own respective ways. DiBonsa hasn't shot the ball well yet. I'd like to see him have a game where he shoots the ball well, and I don't even know if he's going to play much moving forward in the summer league. And Darren Peterson, a lot of turnovers, but we saw some of the flashes, especially in Utah with the three-point shooting. Looked a bit more bursty, a bit more explosive, very encouraging there. And man, oh man, oh man, oh man, Caleb Wilson. Oh my God. That first game he had with 7 three-pointers for Chicago, matching the amount of threes he had last year at North Carolina. Just insane. Like, if I took off my glasses and was watching, I wasn't, like, sure, like, what I was seeing. I couldn't see the screen as much. I would think it was DiBonsa. That's what Caleb Wilson looked like in that debut 35-point game he had. Just the way he was moving, he looked like A.J. DiBonsa, but he's not. He was the fourth pick in the draft. And the threes, the pull-ups, the command out there was next level. And then his game last night, on Monday, his second game, wasn't really that good in the first three quarters. But even then, in that fourth quarter, that dunk he had, he took off so far from the basket, just so explosive. This draft class really could be historic, man. I mean, like, there's so many guys we didn't even mention that could end up being standout players. I'm just beyond impressed by what we've seen from this rookie class already. I think even guys like Bruce Thornton with Houston in the second round. I'm just very excited about this draft class, and I can't wait to see the way it actually translates to their rookie seasons. We'll be right back. Next question from Parker. Let's talk about some non-rookies here. Parker said, what's your starting five of breakout candidates? So this question I could answer with, like, non-summer league players, but I'm going to stick to guys who are in the summer league, and I'm also going to stick to guys that weren't on all rookie teams last year. So that means no Cedric Coward. That means no Maxime Reyneau. So, like, those guys are off the table. My five will be Yohan Berenguer from the Minnesota Timberwolves, Kaman Malawach from the Phoenix Suns, Liam McNeely from the Charlotte Hornets, Ugo Gonzalez from the Boston Celtics, and Jace Richardson from the Orlando Magic. That's my five. And just to briefly go through each of those guys, Berenger, the explosiveness, the lob-catching ability, looks a bit more comfortable with the ball in his hands as well. Not as a creator, but like doing one dribble, finish at the basket, facilitating, things like that. I think that's what can earn him minutes as the backup big man to Rudy Gobert. And for Minnesota, there's an opening. Like there's an opening for minutes in the front court. And Berenger looks like a guy who's done a lot to do that in the short term, but also could make Gobert pretty expendable in trades sooner than later if he is indeed going to translate this to real games. Come on, Malawach for the Phoenix Suns. Didn't really play much as a rookie, but I think he's very important to this team moving forward because Koa Pete looks good. He looks very good as a rookie. He's not a three-point shooter, hasn't made a three yet. He's hitting some pull-up twos. That's encouraging. But Koa Pete's an interior player. That's what he's going to be. Like even if the shot translates, he's going to be a low-volume shooter. Malawach is your front court bet to space the floor. And Malawach looks a lot more comfortable, a lot more fluid than really the last time we saw him with any consistency at Duke. He was a raw project when they took him with the 10th pick last year, and I'm very encouraged by the way in which he's performed in summer league. Next up, Liam McNeely. There's an opening for more wing shooting at for Charlotte, and McNeely didn't play a whole lot as a rookie, as a second rounder. But I think this coming year, he could be due for a bigger year, and he looks very comfortable. Looks too good for summer league, to be honest with you. And then Ugo Gonzalez. Obviously, he's a big name this offseason because Boston didn't want to put him in the deal for Giannis Antetokounmpo. I think you're kind of starting to understand why, with just how comfortable he looks out there, both playing for the Spanish national team before coming to Vegas to play with Boston, but also now with the Boston Celtics. Ugo is not necessarily going to be the type of guy who, look, he's not even scoring the ball well this summer league. He's shooting like, I think, 30% from the field. But the creation, the passing, the playmaking is where I'm so encouraged by him because we know the things that he can already do. We know he can defend at a very high level. We know he can hustle. We know he can rebound. We know he can cut to the rim. We know he can do all of those things. Even as a rookie, he did them. But the creation off the dribble, the connective passing, I think that offensively on top of solid spot-up shooting could make him due for a bigger role this year in Boston because we talk all the time, no Jaylen Brown. Who absorbs that usage? Obviously, Paul George is going to get a big part of it. Jason Tatum, you'd hope, has a career year individually. Peyton Pritchard could do a lot more as well, but then who is it? Ugo Gonzalez, Baylor Shireman, where do those other touches go to? And I'd say Ugo is doing a good audition to for those minutes as a creator, as a secondary guy in that rotation. Then Jace Richardson with the Orlando Magic. They need some perimeter creation. They need a three-point shooter. I don't care that Jace is small. I don't care that he's tiny. It doesn't matter. Jace has an elite feel for the game. He has a very high-level jumper, and I think he can be additive to that Orlando Magic rotation. And if they don't see it that way, I'd be pretty shocked. I'd be pretty shocked. He feels like a guy that should be getting minutes and should be getting an opportunity to help solve from within the issues that Magic team has. Grand asked, if the Clippers get a top five pick in next year's draft, does that mean the Celtics will not have the potential to get a top five pick with that 2028 Clippers pick that they got back in the Jaylen Brown deal? No. They would have the opportunity to get a top five pick. And that's because the number one in the top five pick streaks, you can't get number one 2 years in a row, and you can't get top five 3 years in a row. Those streaks are tied to your own pick. So the Clippers were number five this year with a pick courtesy of the Pacers. That means if Indiana was top five again next year, then Indiana wouldn't be able to be top five again in 2028. The Clippers could be top five this year and then top five again in 2028. So no, it does not apply to Boston, not a concern. They can be top five again. The Clippers can with that pick in 2028, meaning Boston could have the rights to that pick. Next up from Big Tennis Fan, any intel on what the Pistons are doing? They still need a legit number two. No, I don't know what exactly the deal is here with Detroit making big deals. Jalen Duren obviously still stuck in restricted free agency. Not a lot of leverage for him out there. I had reported a few weeks ago that the Pistons were one of the teams in on Trey Murphy. I haven't heard much there recently. the last thing I heard and that I did report on this podcast, I believe, was that people don't really know if the Pelicans are seriously actually listening to offers, if they're actually playing ball here, or if they're just taking in offers and that's that. They're not going to take any deals. I've heard they wanted 3 first-round draft picks. I've heard from other people that maybe it's even more than that, which seems just absolutely insane to me. I love Trey Murphy. I think he's a really good player, but I'm not giving up that much for Trey Murphy. That said, you know, like Detroit, this is what I was concerned about in February when they only made one trade for Kevin Huerta. And then ultimately they did nothing else. And I was concerned about the fact that they passed on an opportunity to bolster the roster during a season in which they were headed towards being the number one seed, and they lose in the second round. This summer, getting John Collins, he's in, Isaiah Stewart's out. I think that is kind of a wash, in my opinion. I'm really high on Beef Stew. I thought Beef Stew earlier in the year, minutes aside from a per-minute production basis, was an all-defensive caliber player until he got hurt late in the year and his defense fell off, his three-pointer fell off. But I'm a big Beef Stew fan, and John Collins, to me, is a better shooter, a better three-point guy. But defensively, he's nowhere close to Isaiah Stewart. So that's more of a wash. You bring back Duncan Robinson. You add Isaiah Joe. You re-sign Kevin Huerta, who hasn't shot well at all in recent years. You bring on Tayshaun Prince. Chaz Lanier's looked great in summer league as a three-point shooter. This is more shooting than Cade Cunningham has ever had in his entire career around him. That's an encouraging thing. But to your point, big tennis fan, he still needs a number two. He still needs a number two. And Jalen Duren did not look like he can be that guy in the postseason. And Ibuka Okori, as a rookie, it's too much to expect. And so I think for the Pistons, they still need to be aggressive. They have all of their future draft picks. They still have a lot of young players. You could flip Okori. You could trade Ron Holland. Like, you got to make a move here to bolster this team around Cade Cunningham. And maybe it's just not out there. But again, this is what I was concerned about in February, because I think there were opportunities there to make an aggressive move, including for Trey Murphy at the time. From Clutch My Pearls, what's your best band and or album recommendation right now? To be totally transparent with you, I get to sort through a lot of albums this year that I have not heard. The one I have been most obsessed with, though, is from a band that I've loved for, I don't know, 16, 17 years of my life, and that's Muse. I think their new album, The Wow Signal, is their best album since The Resistance in 2009. I love Muse. I've seen them in concert so many times, and I'm going to see them in concert again this summer for this tour because they're back. They're back, baby. This album is absolutely sensational front to back. It has no skips, in my opinion. I think Muse definitely put their all into this, both musically, lyrically. I'm fired up about it. I can't wait to see them live. I think Muse is probably one of my favorite bands to see live with the energy that they have in the building. It's not the same as it was probably in the 2000s with Origin of Symmetry and some of the tours back then that they had, especially their European shows. But Shimmering Scars on this album is beautiful. It's excellent. Hexagons is amazing. Hush, the song they did with Ellie Goulding. Very excited about that one too. But The Wow Signal by Muse is the album that I've been listening to a hell of a lot lately. From CJ, where do you think the most best fit and the most obvious destination for LeBron? CJ, thank you for the question. I'd say the best fit and most obvious destination, in my opinion, is the Minnesota Timberwolves. But for LeBron James, he might not want to live in Minnesota. So that's a whole different conversation about where LeBron wants to live and where he wants to take his talents to next. But I just think you insert LeBron, plop him into that Minnesota roster with Gobert, Jaden McDaniels, Anthony Edwards, LaMelo Ball. What's missing? A player, a connective piece, a four to replace those Julius Randle minutes. Can you imagine replacing Julius Randle with LeBron James? Are you kidding me? And you replace Mike Conley with LaMelo Ball, that team could suddenly become the favorite in the Western Conference, especially given the way some of those young guys are looking. Yohan Berenguer talked about him earlier as a five, part of that rotation. Terrence Shannon Jr., potentially another step forward this coming year. That Minnesota team, to me, I think on paper, is the best fit for LeBron James to go pursue a championship. And I think for him, it's really just a matter of, do I want to live here? Are these the guys I want to play with? I don't know why he wouldn't, personally. Like, he should be thinking about going to get ring number 5. And maybe even go try to think about getting ring number 6 as well. Because I always talk about Tom Brady leaving New England for Tampa Bay. Tom Brady was widely considered the GOAT after his 6 rings with the Patriots. But getting number 7 made it obvious. It made it so clear that Tom Brady was the GOAT. There's no arguing it. People could argue that Aaron Rodgers or Peyton Manning or Patrick Mahomes were more talented quarterbacks, had greater peaks individually. But nobody could argue against Tom Brady being the greatest player of all time. And for LeBron James, that is still a debate. Even people of this generation, kids growing up today, still might look back and say Jordan was better than LeBron James. If he adds another 1 or another 2 on a team like Minnesota, and he's the final piece to help put them over the top alongside LaMelo Ball, I think that's the type of thing that would move more people towards the LeBron James side of the argument rather than the Michael Jordan one. And maybe he doesn't care anymore. He did say himself he has nothing left to prove. But I hope he chooses a new team, personally. We've already seen Cleveland, the comeback, the return, the promise that was fulfilled winning the championship. There is no way the sequel to that will be any better. It's just not going to happen. Miami, I mean, look, Miami would be really cool pairing up with Giannis and seeing those guys together, but I don't love the basketball fit there. So I wouldn't be that excited about the Cleveland or Miami choices if LeBron went there. I honestly wouldn't. But if he went to Minnesota and got through the Western Conference and won a ring there, man, like that would be incredible. From Dub Nation on Threads, Dub Nation asked, is the Wemby contract a coming trend or is it an exception? Victor Wembanyama, of course, took a lower max contract to re-sign with the San Antonio Spurs, which created a whole bunch of controversy over the weekend on social media. A lot of people saying this is bad for the players. Other people saying this is a great thing for the team. Like, there's a lot of debate back and forth. I don't really care about any of that. I think personally, Wemby made a good choice for the team. We saw this with Jalen Brunson taking a discount, and he's doing the same thing with San Antonio. These guys make a hell of a lot of money. $250 million, $300 million before taxes. I mean, come on. Let's be serious. That is, if you're smart, that is generational wealth for you, your kids, their kids, their kids. If you just play smart, that's it. You don't even have to have a times 10 stock investment or private equity investment for that to be generational wealth. Just be smart. You can put it into the S&P 500 and you're good. So I think for Victor Wembanyama taking this discount, not a big difference for him personally necessarily, but a massive difference for the organization under the constraints of the salary cap. And so I think for San Antonio, a great thing for them, a great choice for Victor Wembanyama, a selfless choice, but also for this being a trend, I don't know. I don't know. I do not know if it will be. We see it with Brunson. We see it with Wemby. So that's 2. If a third player does it, if a fourth player does it, like, yeah, I would say this is going to become a trend if that is indeed the case with another player or 2 doing this. But until that happens, I have a hard time calling it a trend because other guys still like to get their money as much as their money as they possibly can. And we just saw Donovan Mitchell, same thing, sign for as much as he can. And there's no shots against him doing that or any player doing that. You do you. But ultimately, I have much respect for Wemby doing that at this level for the Spurs because they're going to have some tough salary questions coming up. Last question here from D-backs fan. Hype for the Odyssey from 1 to 10. Well, considering I bought a 70 millimeter IMAX ticket, yes, the hype is at 10 because I'm a Nolan stan. I love Christopher Nolan, and I can't wait for the Odyssey. I'll see anything Christopher Nolan puts out there. I'll definitely go see The Prestige when that's back in theaters later this year. I've only seen it on TV or I don't know when I watched it the first time, probably on my laptop or something like that many years ago. And I'm not going to watch it again this year until I get to see The Prestige in theaters. But I'm hyped for The Odyssey. I'd say I'm a hype at maybe not a 10, but a 9, 0.5. The Odyssey, like from what I remember, it's not like the most thrilling story, the most exciting book. But perhaps the movie Nolan will turn this into something glorious, like he does with basically anything he touches. So yes, I'm very excited. I guess I'm a 10. If I bought a ticket to drive an hour to go see it in 70 millimeter in Providence, Rhode Island, yeah, I'm a 10. I'm a 10 comparatively to a lot of other people. But that's all we get for today, everybody. Thank you for the mailbag questions. We'll answer some more mailbag questions throughout the summer. So if you want to submit questions, you can, of course, hit me up on social media at Kevin O'Connor on X, on Threads, and on Instagram, and on TikTok, too. So hit me up there anywhere on social media. But also you can email me at kocshow@yahoosports.com. That's a good way to reach me as well. But anywhere you hit me up, just, you know, say it's for the mailbag. You can hit me up in the Spotify comments as well. We're looking through everywhere for questions because we got a long summer ahead, lots to talk about. And who knows? When are we going to get a LeBron decision? When are we going to get a LeBron decision? I look forward to that news actually happening. We'll be live breaking that down whenever it doesn't inevitably happen. Jalen Duren's still out there as well. Still some other good lingering free agents. Who knows when these things are going to happen and how long it's going to linger, but I look forward to it when it does. Thank you guys for listening today. Thank you to Emmy and the team for producing today's episode. We'll be back again on Thursday or sooner if there's breaking news. So talk to you soon and have a good week.